Yes, sir. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin and Eric and myself review them every week. Now, we don't have many movies to review this week. In fact, we're only going to review two movies. So that gives us plenty of time to open up the phone lines and talk to you guys with your movie questions. Any movies that are out right now, or perhaps you want to talk about your favorite movies or least favorite movies, surprising or disappointing movies of 2012. You can call up right now, and we'll take your phone calls. We got time to take more calls tonight. So it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Now, remember, tomorrow night, Colin and Eric are going to be here live in studio after 10 o'clock. I should say tonight, Saturday night, after 10 o'clock, and we'll do the full roundup. We'll do our best and worst lists and talk about some of the other subcategories that we do every single year, and we'll wrap it all up starting at 10 tomorrow night live in the studio. So 312-981-7200, that's the phone number. If you want to call now, again, we have time to take some phone calls about movies, questions, your favorite of the year, things that are out right now. Any movie kind of question that you have, we'll take it. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Colin to the show. Hello, Colin.
Hi there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Oh, hello.
Hello. All righty, then. Let's first go over, as we often do, even though we haven't seen these are the ones that are available on demand. The first one that's available on demand, again, if you have like Xfinity on demand, there are different on demand services, and many of these movies are available on those services. And and also, isn't there also like Amazon on demand as well?
Yeah. Amazon, iTunes, you can get stuff
right
on. Yeah.
Colin, I'm curious. Did you see the Coscarelli movie?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. I've been busy getting ready for tomorrow night's show.
Yes, so, I know.
I've been whittling
my lists and doing all kinds of stuff with that. But
yeah,
you, really, John dies in the end. I really enjoyed it. So I'm just curious.
I'm looking forward to it after the review. It's on my calendar. I'm thinking maybe Sunday night.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy movie. That's all I'm going to say. Okay, so, All Superheroes Must Die is the first movie that we want to mention that's available on demand. What's the deal here?
It's actually a movie that's actually coming to DVD later this month, so it's kind of a small little on demand window.
Uh-huh.
But I'm curious about it mainly because one of the people behind it was responsible for the movie The FP from earlier this year.
Oh, right.
Did you ever catch up with that one,
Nick? I never
Nick?
Did. No.
Yeah, no,
that's
the same.
Really funny.
I just want to double check that, make sure I got that right. Yeah, it's
yeah,
the same guy who did the FP.
Yeah.
So so I'm definitely interested in it, and it's got James Remar.
Yeah, well, you can't go wrong, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Remar. I mean, and you know, he's so awesome that Quentin Tarantino cast him in two completely different roles in Django.
Yeah.
just so we could get more Remar.
Sort of and this one sort of seems to be another sort of not a direct parody or whatnot, but the superheroes are sort of captured by a supervillain and sort of have to go through a whole bunch of tasks in order to save a town.
Hmm. All right,
you know. So, and if anyone's familiar with the FP, which is on DVD and Blu-ray, people should definitely take a look at that one. This one, it might be worth a look.
Now, you know, I'm looking at its IMDb page, and it's actually the title that they have is Versus.
Yeah. Yeah, All Superheroes Must Die is what I was familiar with when it was announced for DVD.
Okay.
A couple months ago.
So I guess they may have changed the title.
Yeah.
You know, to make it more, I don't know, because Versus could be, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they changed the title for its release on DVD.
Doesn't have a very good rating on IMDb.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, 2.5 right now out of 10.
That's not...
Not very good.
Good, no.
Yeah.
All right, and then the next one is, the next one that's available is on demand is Crawl Space. Now, I'm sorry, but when I hear that title, I think Klaus Kinski.
Of course you do.
I mean, you can't
yeah,
help but think Klaus Kinski because that movie is classic crap.
Yeah.
And I love it. And I think it's was the female lead was Martin Balsam's daughter, I think.
Talia
Balsam, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember seeing Crawl Space and just laughing through the whole thing. So whenever I hear Crawl Space, I immediately picture Klaus Kinski.
But, yeah, I picture the video box.
But this has,
I know the video box very well of Crawl Space. But this one, this is an Australian movie.
Yeah.
And it's military group are called into a military installation that has lost contact with it, and there's some malevolent force waiting for them in there. I saw a little bit of this movie this morning before I turned it off.
Oh, okay.
It's the kind of movie where it looks like they got an idea, like, okay, let's look at, we got a military, we got a base, and something's going to be in there. It's like, okay, go. You know, so they get there, and then it's basically them, like, shouting orders at each other and then just shooting at the screen.
Okay.
And we don't really never see what they're shooting at.
Okay.
It's one of those types of movies.
All
and
right.
After about 20 minutes of that, I'm like, I got a life.
Yeah.
I ain't got time for this.
Okay. Well, so that's Crawl Space.
Yeah.
Not recommended. All right. Now, this next one is called The Sorcerer and the White Snake, and I just can't I just can't help but think of, you know, White Snake, the band.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the band, but this is indeed a Jet Li movie.
It is a Jet Li movie.
Yeah.
And the most interesting thing I can see about it, when you look at the IMDb page and you look at the sort of the history of the film, it talks about how Jet Li believes he was tricked into being a part of this movie because the director told him that he was not going to have to fight that much, and it turned out to not be the case.
What?
Yeah. If you look at the IMDb page, there's some, like, history or trivia or something like that,
uh-huh.
And that's what the story is. So the movie is it's a couple years old, actually. It's just getting kind of a U.S. release now here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a short Jet Li movie and, you know, Sorcerer and the White Snake. You know, maybe it's got Tawny Katane on a car.
There you go. It says, in an interview with the entire cast of the movie, Jet Li mentioned that he got tricked into accepting the role. The producers supposedly convinced him that he didn't have to fight a lot, but it turned out to be the exact opposite.
There you go.
He complained.
Did you read the thing under it?
That the title was his.
No, on the actual trivia page, there's another piece of trivia where it says Jet Li complained that this was his most tiring role to date because he had to hold back every punch against his opponents, mostly women with no martial arts background, while they all went out on him. So he had to sit there and not hit them back while these people have no martial arts training hit him. I want to see this movie.
Yeah, now I want to
see
this.
What that looks like.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely intrigued by that.
But don't you have to ask the question, though? That Jet Li thought he was being hired for his acting skills.
Right.
There's only one reason you hire Jet Li.
Right, I know.
To punch people.
Yeah, and if you're not going to, you know, it's, if he's not going to, if he doesn't want to do a lot of fighting, get him out of the movie like in the Expendables.
Right.
You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Just
I don't want to do a lot of fighting.
Out of plane.
There you go. Two
and
scenes
gone.
And you're gone. Yeah, so there
right.
You go. All right, well.
Showing up. Here's your check.
The Sorcerer and the White Snake. And I think out of the three, that's the one that I would like to watch the most. You know,
of course.
Because the one called Crawl Space doesn't have Klaus Kinski in it. So
it doesn't.
All right, we got a quick question here. And if you guys want to jump in, like I said, we're only reviewing two movies this week on Friday. So we got time to take your calls. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in with any questions, if you got a favorite movie of the year that you want to share with us, or a comment, or movies in general, 312-981-7200. We got time to take some calls tonight. This is Roland on WGN. Hi, Roland.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
Listen, I just wanted to check with some guys who kind of know what they, you know, things about movies, okay? I went and saw Les Miserables,
yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that I thought it was awful or anything. I just don't get it. I don't get what the big deal is on the music. I don't get what the big deal. I mean, like, I guess I'm a real big, huge Andrew Lloyd Webber fan. So I like a lot of the stuff he does. But when I went to see Les Mis, I don't get it. I mean, I know it's been around for 20 years.
Yeah.
And if people, you know, and I just need somebody's opinion. I was impressed that Russell Crowe was doing his own singing. That
yeah.
was impressive to me. And all of that. But, all I'm saying
all right.
is I don't get it.
You don't get it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I can speak for myself, and then I'll let Colin and Eric speak. I hated it, Roland.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I hated
okay.
it.
I
found
good.
It. I found it.
Okay.
And let me just tell you, I saw it on stage twice.
Okay.
I saw it on stage twice. So I enjoyed the play. I just think they did a really horrible job with the movie. And it was an absolute chore to sit through. Colin, you liked parts of it, or?
I liked it. I think we're the wrong people to call to help you get it, though. I mean, I don't think any of us are like, I mean, Nick is the closest one to tell you. I mean, he saw the musical on stage, and he, you know, liked it. But I'm I'm sort of between the two of you. I mean, I you know, wall to wall, I don't mind a good musical, you know, and I think for a lot of the songs, when there are melodies to them in Les Mis, I think those, you know, those moments are really strong. Those
right.
melodies stay in your head. But wall to wall singing just doesn't do it for me. So in that respect, I'm kind of with you in that I don't get it, but.
I thought the Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff, I think they do a better job of it from the, you know, the singing that's done between the major songs and stuff. And I found that really difficult, like you said, to sit through.
It's tough. All right, Eric, what did you think?
Well, I'm thinking Colin and I are pretty much on the same page as far as our likability of the movie is concerned. I was just curious, you know, Roland, you said you're a fan of Andrew Lloyd Webber, so I'm just wondering exactly how much more there really is to get with Les Miserables. Is it just the fact that they are, you know, singing pretty, you know, constantly throughout the thing, that there's no sort of break in the singing?
No. I just think he writes better melodies. You listen to this stuff, it's much more memorable for me than what I heard in Les Miserables.
Right.
I mean, I think 2-3 songs, that was it. The rest of them was like, you know, where's your Andrew Lloyd, any of them, Vita, any of them, you've got a family opera, you know, you get stuff you're going to walk away remembering, you know?
Okay, I see that because I know I can't, other than maybe 2 or 3, I remember Master of the House because that was on Seinfeld.
Uh-huh.
And obviously Anne Hathaway's big number.
Right.
I remember those two songs. The other ones are all just kind of bleed into one
another.
Yeah,
they all just kind of bleed into each other, yeah. Well, Eric and Colin liked it more than I did. I just didn't like it at all.
I didn't care for it at all.
Yeah, okay. All right, thanks, Roland.
Thank you.
All right, take care. And we didn't help him at all.
Not at all.
That has more to do with musical taste, you know.
Right.
You can't make somebody like a piece of music. You can't explain that to people.
No, that's
like
absolutely true. All right, Colin, Eric, hang on. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. And it is the Midnight Movie Reviews. That's exactly what we're doing here. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And, you can join in with us and ask your questions, or if you've got your favorite movies of the year that you want to jump in here and talk about, you can do that as well. Colin and Eric are here, and here we go. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Okay. Let's get back. Before we get back to the movies, which we'll do in a second here, I wanted to ask you guys if either of you have seen the Red Band trailer for the Evil Dead remake.
I have.
Yeah. Yes, Colin?
Yes, I have.
And Eric?
Yep. It'll be a fun April.
I about lost my mind when I saw it, and we all feel this way about remakes. You know what I mean? It's
mm-hmm.
like, okay. You know, especially remakes of classic movies, you know, and I obviously Evil Dead's one of my favorite horror movies. I love it. I love all three of them. And when I heard that they were remaking Evil Dead, I immediately was like, no, uh-uh. And the guy who directed it, I looked up his credits, you know, beforehand, and he hasn't really directed anything before this, except for shorts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is his first feature. And then somebody sent me a link last night. To the trailer, to the red band trailer, and I seriously thought my head was going to explode. Like, what did you guys think?
This might be a case where it's just like the Dawn of the Dead remake. It's sort of unfortunate that they're calling it Evil Dead.
Yeah,
but it, you know, on its own, it could and you know, it's going to upset a lot of fans just the existence of it.
Yeah,
but it could be just a kick-ass movie in its own right.
Well, the trailer is scary. I mean, the trailer is scary, and you don't say that very often about trailers. Like, oh, man, that trailer scared the crap out of me. That I was sitting in this room watching it last night, and I was like, what in the hell? I mean, it was freaky, man, and loaded with all kinds of fantastic gore, and I can't wait to see this. Eric, what did you think of the trailer?
I actually turned the trailer off.
Oh, did you?
But I mean that in a good way. because there was so much going on, because it was kind of a longer trailer than we're used to.
Yeah.
And there was so much stuff going on. Like, and after like a minute and a half of it, I'm like, okay, I don't want to see anymore.
Yeah.
I want some of this preserved for the experience, because if it's anything like that 90 seconds, I saw the first trailer they premiered of like a month ago or a month and a half ago or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that had potential.
Yeah.
This thing could really be something.
No, I know. I watched the trailer three times last night, and I just I was just giddy, man. I was giddy.
Yeah.
I posted it on my Facebook page. I posted it on the show page. I sent it to my horror friends, you know, my horror fanatic friends. Like, I sent it to Ryan Oliver, and Ryan Oliver sent me back, when is this thing coming out, like in all caps? And, you know, I sent it, you know, like I had my buddy Manny watch it. Every single person who watched it was like, I cannot wait till this thing comes out. It looks completely insane. And I loved it. I thought it was great. It was posted on my Facebook page if somebody wants to try and find it. But again, I do want to warn people, because it's an unrated trailer.
Yeah.
So there's stuff in there that's like, it's disgusting and really, really scary. There's really scary stuff. So if you are freaked out easily, if you don't like gore, don't watch the trailer. Just because it's a trailer, don't be fooled. But if you're a horror film fan, you need to find the Red Band trailer for Evil Dead and watch it, because it's unbelievable. Do we have a date? I know it comes out in April.
It's like the first or second week of April. It's like right around Easter, I think.
yeah, there you go.
Yeah, this is a very, very. I would not be surprised. I was talking about this with someone last night, that maybe it premieres in South by Southwest.
That would be pretty cool. You can report on it then, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, I am, as a horror film fan, I just went through the roof. I was like, it made me very happy. So, all right, you guys, hang on. We got the news, and then we'll. Speaking of horror movies, we got one to review coming up in a few minutes. The news is next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. And Colin and Eric joined me for the Midnight Movie Reviews. I just want to let everybody know that I reposted the Evil Dead trailer on my Facebook page. So it's there. If you go to the show's Facebook page, it's right there. So you should probably check it out. So it's facebook.com/NickDShow. Again, be warned. If you don't like gore and you're easily freaked out, don't watch it. That's all I'm saying. By the way, can I ask a question here, Eric?
Please do.
What the hell is movie 43?
Movie 43 is this year's extreme movie. Does that make any sense to anyone?
Yeah.
Okay. Except this one's got bigger stars.
What
in it?
Oh.
It's a sketch thing. It's a sketchy, you know, comedy thing, and the Farrelly brothers are behind it.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if they're directing. They directed some of the segments, I believe, and produced the movie. Yeah.
They got like 10 directors on this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I think the Farrelly
Elizabeth
are
Banks?
Behind it. Who directed, Colin?
Elizabeth Banks, Griffin Dunn, yeah, Peter Farrelly, James Gunn, Bob Odenkirk, Pitt Ratner. A lot of names on here.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Hugh Jackman, Emma Stone, Elizabeth Banks, Chloe Moretz is in it.
Yeah,
Gerard,
a lot of stars.
Gerard Butler, Kate Winslet, Kristen Bell, Naomi Watts, Anna Faris, Richard Gere, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, whatever the hell, however you say his last name, Halle Berry, Chris Pratt, Josh Duhamel, Uma Thurman, Justin Long. What the hell is going on? Liev Schreiber. Oh, reuniting with Sean William Scott.
Sudeikis
is in it. Kate Bosworth, Terrence Howard, what is this?
Well, it's either this year's Extreme Movie or this year's Amazon Women on the Moon.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right. Okay. Are they screening
this? Four cinematographers.
Are they screening this?
I'm going to say no. I'm taking a stab.
All right. All right. Well, speaking of not screening things.
Yeah.
Eric, why don't you tell us about Texas Chainsaw 3D?
Sure. Can you give me 2 minutes? I'm watching the Evil Dead trailer here. Give me a couple minutes. Bear with me. Okay, it's done. All right. Texas Chainsaw 3D. And for the past week or so, the one question everyone seems to be asking me, surprisingly enough, is exactly when is this movie set?
Right.
How does this movie fit in with all the other films? It's like the seventh, you know, Texas Chainsaw movie, if you count all the originals and the crappy sequels and then the remake and the prequel to the remake and all this stuff. Well, as the movie begins, it does kind of answer that question. We're taken back to the 1970s original and the ending of that film where the girl gets away and Leatherface is back at the house. And as the movie opens, basically a lynch mob shows up after the girl has reported the family to the police, and they burn down Leatherface's home and his family, and everyone dies. A little baby is taken by a couple of vigilantes because the mother cannot have children. So they take the child away, and however many years later, she's now a very, very beautiful butcher. She finds out that she has inherited a house from her grandmother, her long-lost grandmother, whom she never knew. She finds out she was adopted and takes a road trip with a number of her friends, three of them to be precise, to claim this house, which if she would read the letter that her grandmother left for her, she would know that there is actually a surprise visitor living in the basement. Yes, it's Leatherface. Mm-hmm. He's down there, locked away, been living with Grandma for all this time, thanks to a hitchhiker they pick up along the way, Leatherface is released, and all kinds of mayhem ensues in the town. Okay, this is pretty, pretty bad stuff. While I was initially intrigued at the beginning as sort of them trying to, you know, make this some sort of direct prequel, that interest wanes after about 4 minutes, as the movie just becomes just sort of another version of the Texas Chainsaw story with the kids showing up and Leatherface, you know, slicing them up and whatnot. And this movie is just kind of there, and it has no sense of style. It has certainly no sense of suspense or horror to it. The director's entire idea of horror is just the sound of the chainsaw and shots of the chainsaw, and occasionally a close-up of the chainsaw slicing somebody in half. The lead heroine in the movie can't seem to run 5 feet without falling down, which takes on comical effect throughout the movie. And then the movie shifts gears halfway through to where Leatherface, you know, might be the hero of the movie. It takes a very weird, very questionable moral turn about two-thirds of the way through this movie. It's not fun. It's not scary. It's not interesting. The whatever ideas it thinks it's raising at the end of the movie are completely just insane and just not fascinating in the slightest. This is how we usually start off New Year's, and we got another crappy horror film to start off this one.
Yeah, this is terrible, man. This is just terrible stuff and absolutely unnecessary. I will say this. I think that this the lead is really beautiful.
Oh, God, is she?
I mean, what in the eyes on this woman.
I know.
I don't know. What. I mean, I'm looking her up on IMDb. I don't know who she is.
I first noticed her in the Percy Jackson movie.
Yeah.
She was the female heroine girlfriend in that one, and she has a small part in Hall Pass.
I don't remember. Do you remember what she played in Hall Pass?
She was late in the movie. She was like Owen Wilson's babysitter, and she had kind of a thing for him.
Oh, okay.
And like she had like an aunt that Jason Sudeikis did stuff with.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, late in the film. Yeah.
Okay. Well, her name is Alexandra Daddario.
Yes.
Daddario, yeah. And she's beautiful, man.
Gorgeous.
She's the best
absolutely
part.
Gorgeous.
I mean, she's the best part of the movie. I mean, I was like, wow.
Clearly.
I mean, my God, this woman is
I'm sitting there falling asleep, and then, you know, a shirt gets popped.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh.
Yeah,
okay.
No, she's something, man.
Can I ask one legitimate question that at least two of us seem to have a big question on regarding the climax of this movie.
Okay.
If I may. There's.
I don't want to give anything away.
No, we're not going to give anything away.
Okay.
But there's a sort of a there's a little bit of a twist in the movie, not with Leatherface, but with one character you think there's
help.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
What happens to that character?
I don't know.
There's no closure to him, is there?
I don't know. I have no
he's
idea.
He's in the climax, and then he's not.
Yeah, I know. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
5 minutes, I walked out of the theater going, what happened to him?
Yeah, I know.
Did I miss something?
No, I don't think you missed anything. I think it's just that bad a movie.
Yeah,
it's that bad a movie. It's absolutely terrible. Absolutely unnecessary. And you know, I'm not a fan of any of the Texas Chainsaw movies except for the first one.
Right.
And the second one to me has moments of hilarity in it because it's so completely over the top and Dennis Hopper is ridiculous, but it's not a good film.
Yeah, Bill Moseley's in this one.
Yes, of course he is. I think it's a requirement. Right. this is terrible. And you know, I'm looking at one of the newspapers, the theater section, and the Lansing Cinema in Lansing, you know, has their little ad with their movies and their showtimes and everything. According to the Lansing Cinema, the Texas Chainsaw 3D is rated PG.
Oh, good.
So,
fantastic.
So, bring the kids.
Yeah.
All right. Except for a really beautiful female lead, this movie is crap. So that's pretty much it. All right, guys, hang on. We got a big movie to talk about next. It's Catherine Bigelow's follow up to The Hurt Locker, Zero Dark Thirty. That's next on WGN. Hollywood. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN's The Midnight Movie Reviews. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower. We only had a couple of movies to review this week, so if you want to jump in with a phone call, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And remember, tomorrow, Colin and Eric will be here live in studio, or I should say tonight, Saturday night at 10. Colin and Eric will be here live, and we are going to do our big year-end show where we'll do the best and the worst movies of the year and all that good stuff. Welcome back to the show, guys.
Hello.
Colin, tell us about Zero Dark Thirty.
Okay. This is the account of how we managed to hunt down and finally kill Osama bin Laden. And Jessica Chastain plays a CIA operative who, at the start of the film in 2002, is trying to get information out of a Saudi who might be a link to finding bin Laden. And for the next 10 years or so, we follow her and the people around her as they, you know, track down leads, run into brick walls, and deal with the bureaucracy and politics of the changing times throughout that decade. There are bombings that take place throughout the world that have a direct effect on their search, and there are policies regarding interrogation and torture that, you know, shift the dynamic about how they interact with their detainees, and all of this is explored until Chastain's character gets the lead that she's been looking for, and it's kind of up to her to convince everyone around her that she's on the right track. This is like a sort of like a police procedural film. It's very straightforward. It's pretty much just about how the job got done. It doesn't have a political axe to grind, and the film is, you know, broken up into chapters, supposed to keep it from feeling disjointed, and it never does. In fact, of all the, you know, 2.5 hour epics out there right now, this is the one that doesn't feel as long as it is. It moves like lightning. You know, when it was over, I still wanted more, and in a good way. I saw the film a second time today, and everything about it holds up. When I walked out, I felt like I was on that journey with Chastain's character, and, you know, I could feel the weight of, you know, these big decisions that she has to make. And, you know, it's not a showy performance. It's more subtle, but her, you know, conviction to stay the course is always felt. And I think she and Mark Boll, the screenwriter, and Catherine Bigelow, the director, do a great job of humanizing her, too, which is something I didn't quite pick up on the first time. You know, this is a very single-minded character, but there's a definitely a human being there that, you know, little subtle things that they added in, you know, so that she wasn't just a completely, you know, one-sided, straight-laced character, you know, that really made a difference. It's a tense film. It's an exciting film. You know, as the director of The Hurt Locker and many movies like it. And it has that no BS quality that Bigelow is known for. And I can't think of anyone else better to tell this story. And I think she and Mark Boll did an amazing job. I've seen it twice. I can't wait to see it again. It's definitely one of the year's best.
Okay. Eric.
Well, I definitely agree with Colin about one aspect, and that is of all the sort of the big 150-plus minute epics we've been seeing over the last month and a half, this one definitely moves the quickest. It's the one where I wasn't checking my watch. I wasn't slumping in my seat. I was always interested in the next scene kind of thing. And that's where our agreements kind of come to an end, even though I do like the film and I'm recommending it. I'm not on board with this being one of the best films of the year. I think there are tremendous flaws, particularly in Mark Boll's screenplay, which I think not having the strength of the sort of the central trio in The Hurt Locker, which on Bigelow's half, you know, was sort of basically doing a lot of, you know, basically vignettes of bomb diffusing and action sequences, which are done spectacularly. But at the center, you had these three characters, and they were sort of molded in the sort of this grander idea that they were story that they were telling about the war. With this film, like Colin said, it is a police procedural, but I don't think it compares to a lot of the best ones in its field, whether it be, you know, something like All the President's Men or The Insider or something that I think, you know, does have sort of a bigger context of the story it's telling, like Steven Spielberg's Munich. I'm not crazy about Chastain's performance. I know she's winning a lot of awards. It's a sort of a strength in the movie. I feel the character, there's an underwritten quality to that character. In fact, during the second act of the film, which I think where a lot of the flaws in Boll's script were evident to me, in that it doesn't really give a great idea of fleshing out the central part of the hunt in between the early stuff with all the torture that's all being talked about, up until the stuff in Washington after they find the house and, you know, the waiting game that goes on for that. There's a sequence in the middle of this movie that I feel is one of the worst sequences Bigelow has ever directed. And I mean that there's a waiting game for a suspect, which I won't give anything more away, but it's filmed in such a way and telegraphed in such a way and acted in such a way that it felt like I was watching a really, really bad episode of Homeland. But, you know, you get to the raid at the end. It's absolutely riveting, obviously. I don't think the film earns its final shot at all. But it is Bigelow, and Bigelow, you know, does a really terrific job directing, you know, a good portion of the film, at least. I just have a lot of problems with Boll's screenplay, which I feel has a bit of cliche to it, even if it's not evident to a lot of people. But that's my take on it.
Okay, I couldn't disagree with you more. I'm with Colin on this one. I think it's absolutely one of the best films of the year, and I was blown away by it. I think it's, and again, to echo what both of you said, of all of the, you know, really, really long movies that we saw in like 1 week, this one just moves. It does not feel like it's, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes at all. I think Chastain is great in this. I think there's a wonderful air of mystery to her character that she fleshes out. I don't necessarily think it's underwritten. I think it's the nature of this story and what they're trying to cover here. I think the relationships are interesting. I think the character that what's his name plays, the
Jason Clark.
Yeah, the character that Jason Clark plays. I think they have a really interesting dynamic and an interesting relationship. You root for these people. And yet, there's no political agenda here. People who are talking about the torture sequences in Zero Dark Thirty, this movie doesn't take a political side. It's just showing you what happened and how, things have changed morally and politically over the course of these last 10 years. The movie opens with audio from September 11th, the actual attacks of September 11th, and it ends in May of 2011, and everything in between. It covers all of the big attacks that happened that were under Al-Qaeda, and it does it brilliantly. The explosion in the bus in London is handled incredibly well. There's an unbelievably shocking moment in a restaurant that where a hotel and a bomb explodes. And Jessica Chastain's character and another character are there. I think this is a remarkable piece of filmmaking, and I think it's vital. I think it's interesting. I think it's beautifully made. It's intense. It never slows down. The raid at the end is some of the best filmmaking that I think, some of the best directing and some of the best editing filmmaking that Bigelow's ever done. And I mean, and you guys know how I feel about Kathryn Bigelow. I think she's like one of the best filmmakers on the planet. I loved this movie. I think it's an important film. I think it's incredibly exciting, and it's also interesting. Everything about this movie to me soared. Everything. And I think Jessica Chastain gives the best performance of the year as a female wise. I think she's great. And that final shot to me, I was moved. I think it earns it. The final moment of this movie to me is a big emotional moment. So, Colin, I'm with you, man. And I can't wait to see it again either. And
I definitely think the second viewing, it confirms it. Like the final shot that Eric's talking about. I mean, I think this is a woman who, you know, her job is her life.
Yeah.
And you know, now what?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I totally agree. Eric, legit.
Keep their emotions in check.
Legit complaints, man. I totally understand. But man, I'm with the majority, and I'm with the majority on this one. I think.
Yeah. Before all of you guys, and I mean, I sat there watching it, and immediately, and then the second half. One thing I was going to say is that the thing that I started thinking about during that second act, when especially after that the one explosion happens,
right?
The thing that I couldn't get out of my head was how much this felt like a story of like Bigelow's own career. In a way, this woman in sort of a man's world.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I thought a lot about that, and I don't think Bigelow was filming it that way.
No.
But I think you can absolutely read it way.
Yeah.
In both a positive and a negative, I think.
Yeah. All right, that's interesting. That's interesting. We're going to talk more about this one tomorrow, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least Colin and I are.
Yeah, so. You guys can talk about it. I'll go watch the Evil Dead trailer.
There you go. All right, we'll see you guys tomorrow night, 10, live in the studio. Always have a great time doing our year-end wrap-up. I look forward to it. So we'll see you guys Saturday night at 10, okay, guys?
See you tomorrow.
All right, see you later. There you go. Colin and Eric, we thank you for helping us out.